This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen-live or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
This is Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Technogaze, where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology during this holiday season. And I'm Michael, and with me in the studio is Mark.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm good.
Are you good. Full as a gug?
Well, it's the worst thing when you kind of fall ill over the festive season, isn't it?
Oh, it has its pluses, I guess.
Well, perhaps you don't put on as much weight as what you otherwise would, but I've been doing a bit good on the waist front, put it that way.
It's this combination of being on holidays and having food around that's like, it's just there. And luckily I don't celebrate Christmas, so it's not too much of an issue, but there still seems to be lots and lots of food.
Yeah, you can never have enough food, right? Like, the amount of ham that I had the duties of bringing the ham to the family.
Oh, yes.
Like it was, I don't know, 4 or 5 kilos or something. It was on the bone, so I guess that added some weight to it.
But yeah.
Like, we only had a certain amount but it's the whole thing, right? You have ham sandwiches and so forth afterwards. So.
I can imagine you in the car going there, sort of just peeling bits of it off on the drive. That's what I do. That's why I'm mentioning it. Yes.
It's a bit warm. That's no good.
When you say you can never have too much, it reminds me of, I think, the Monty Python movie, was The Life of Brian, where the guy has the wafer at the end and it was just that one wafer too much.
Yep.
But anyway, we
digress.
We, as we usually do, because, you know, we're here to talk about tech, and some of the tech that we're talking about today is Apple related. Yeah, so we're going to have a look at a new security flaw and how Apple have handled that, mm-hmm. and a bit of GLBTI news.
Yes, related to Apple.
Yes, which is good. Mm-hmm. There's been a bit of an update in the last couple of days about the government's mandatory data retention laws with some movement.
Yes.
I think, you know,
grown from this side of the desk.
Yeah, what I said was, the data retention Grinch visiting Oz telcos.
Yeah, it's like, hello, welcome to, you know, government, how we government bureaucracy.
Yeah.
It's, anyway.
And last week, when we were winding up the show, Donna said, oh, which console do I get for Christmas? Well, there is an answer out there.
Ah, yes.
Yes, so we'll have a look at that. The rapture is upon us, or was upon us last week.
Right. Oh, this is Instagram, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, Instagram rapture. When I saw that, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good way.
Some hilarious numbers were lost because of a whole bunch of fake accounts, I think, that Instagram believe are fake accounts anyway.
Yeah. And we're also going to be updating some of the stories that we've covered during the year, some from last week and some from some other times where, you know, there's been a bit of movement and we thought, yep, we'll have a look at that. And it includes, obviously, the latest news on the Sony Pictures hack and the interview in North Korea. Quick look at Elo and what's happening to that new social networking site.
Oh, yes, the social networking. Yep. Yes, I signed up for that.
Oh.
But I haven't really used it since.
Yeah, well, I think you are not atypical of many of their users.
What you're saying is everyone else has done the same thing.
Yeah. Yes, there's an initial rush and not much after that. And we will have a quick look at Google's self-driving car because there's been a bit of an update with that.
Cool.
So, let us move on. And before we do, we would like to remind everyone that we'd love to hear from you during the show.
Yes.
There are lots and lots of ways to contact us.
There is. You can text us, 0427-JOY949.
You can ring up and leave a message with a lovely mushin on reception, 1300-JOY949.
Yes.
And of course, there's the old-fashioned email, onair@joy.org.au. But there's also something else, Twitters.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, once I make sure I've got the tab open. Yes, I do. Yes, you can tweet us at TechnoGaze. TechnoGaze is the Twitter name. With it, yes, we're GAZE, not GAYZ.
That's right.
As some people might assume.
Or GAYS.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we should do a leaked version of TechnoGaze. We'll have to come up with that one.
What do you mean? Like,
well, you know, because instead of, no, you know, T or whatever, T-E-C-H, we could do T3-C-H.
Oh, right.
You know, something like that. Just drop off a vowel as well. It's just like,
we should reserve all the Twitter names because...
all the different variants.
Heaven knows it's a very popular name, I'm sure.
Oh, it is. I get stopped in the street often. Nothing to do with the show, but I just get stopped on the street. Okay, before we digress even further down another path, Apple, they've...
Favourite topic of mine.
Yes, because we are a little bit fabulous here.
Actually, I did notice this on my computer just not long ago, was a little notification pop up in the top right-hand corner of my screen. It said, oh, we've done an update for you. And I'm like, wait, what? Does that even happen?
It does now.
Apparently it does. So there was a security flaw that was found in Unix, I believe.
Yep.
And it was actually, I think, Google, some Google labs or something like that. They found it, some sort of research team or something. But yeah, they identified it. They disclosed it to Apple, and it was around the time protocol, as in the thing that syncs up your clock on your computer. Every now and then your computer will phone back to Apple's time servers or...
Well, I think it phones back to whichever time server your ISP sets as your time server, unless you manually override it.
Right.
So the NTP protocol is used everywhere, network time protocol. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it literally does phone home and say, what's the time? Which is why when, say, you've got your smartphone and you go overseas and you get onto a data network, you find, you know, part of the reason is that it changes the time, which may be through NTP or through GSM network. But it always keeps your computer in sync, which is great because, you know, long gone are the days where, oh, yeah, my clock's out and I've got to reset it. Mm. It does it for you automatically.
And the brilliant thing about that, about the network time protocol as well, is that it works out to, you know, within a second or so. So you've pretty much got very accurate... like to the atom clocks over in I don't know wherever they are, timing.
And I think the protocol is smart enough to be aware about latency. So if it knows that it sends out the message 3 milliseconds ago, and the computer knows that my latency is 10 milliseconds, it does the calculation and it syncs itself so it is, you know, reasonably accurate rather than being out by that 10, 13 milliseconds or something like that.
And
but
the other,
there was a bug.
There was a bug, yes, in the Unix operating system anyway, which is what Apple OS X is based on, is it's got a Unix sort of underlying subsystem. So a lot of the functionality that you get out of Apple's OS X is derived from the Unix-y ways of doing things. Therefore, a bug that's found in Unix is often a bug that's also, particularly on such a low-level sort of thing like the NTP protocol, the network time protocol. Mm. So, it was found, it was fixed, and even, like, there wasn't any sort of news of it until after, I think, the fix was sent out. The news... in this, though, is that Apple have used their ability to send software updates out without telling users.
Yes, without getting user permission. Yeah,
to install it. For the first time. So they've actually never used this function before.
And it's been in the OS for a while. I'm not sure how long, but probably I would guess at least since the previous release, maybe the release before.
Yep.
But they, for whatever reason, they obviously thought that it was serious enough to do, let's push it out.
Yes.
And I don't know whether it was a function to do with the time of the year, that maybe they're concerned that people weren't around, people weren't as aware or focused on security issues.
Mm-hmm.
But it does raise a question.
What's that question?
Well, you know, are there any security implications with Apple being able to basically run anything on my computer at any point in time?
Don't you trust your benevolent overlord of Apple?
I subscribe to the trust no one principle, except for, you know, benevolent me.
Of course, if it was you.
I'm okay. I'm fine. Yeah.
So this is the thing, right? So it's a bit of judgment on Apple's part, and it's significant as well, in my opinion, anyway. That, and I'm, you know, full disclosure, I don't have any sort of need to promote Apple myself, but
what about your million shares?
Oh, I wish. Wow. Yeah. Would I be here?
Bought at the time that Scully left and Jobs came back.
Oh, if only. Yeah, no. Oh, bless. That would have been... Oh, anyway.
Yeah.
No, I do have a penchant for Apple products. I think that they do things well, and there is, in my opinion, justification in releasing this without necessarily asking for permission, because it is a low impact security update. As in, it's from all reports, there's no sort of fallout from it. There's no one complaining that
that's right.
Their computers are no longer working. I mean, what could really go wrong when they update NTP? Maybe your time's going to go out for, you know, some time, and you can always override that anyway. So, you know, it's the kind of thing that maybe it's not such a big concern. But yeah, it does raise the bigger question of, hey, they have this ability to run updates without asking you, which essentially means, say, they have the ability to run code on your local computer without sort of asking if it's okay. So. And that could be any code, really, like down the
that's
line.
That's right. My biggest, I guess, concern, because for Apple per se, I trust them enough to do that, because if they wanted, you know, they could build anything as a backdoor into the operating system, you wouldn't know.
Yeah. And the same with Microsoft, you know, they own the operating system, and they don't release, I mean, they're making moves to release more and more of their operating system as open source, you know, or at least the components that make up what Windows is, but still a lot of it is closed, like you can't see the code, you don't know what's actually running.
That's right.
So you do have an element of trust of the people who make these operating systems, even Linux as well. The same can be said for Linux. You know, you get an update, that could be anything really, but
yeah,
you've
got to accept it.
You trust that's
my only concern is that if, for instance, Apple one day gets hacked in some way, that then this perhaps could be a vehicle.
But, yes, I suspect there's a whole bunch of security around the...
would hope so.
Yes.
Now, let's continue on and look at the next story.
There's one other one, which is an Apple-related story, and it's a good news story for us in the GLBTIQ community. Maybe not so much local, but still good nonetheless. Apple CEO Tim Cook has made a personal donation, to a gay rights campaign over in Alabama, Arkansas, and Mississippi. So it's an undisclosed amount.
Yeah, but it's said to be substantial, and he's helping fund a 3-year campaign that's worth about $8.5 million. So if it's substantial, you know, you can draw your own conclusions. And the aim of the campaign is to build acceptance for the GLBTI community within those southern states.
And that's sort of, I guess, a very targeted thing, because he came, I think, from Arkansas himself.
Alabama.
He grew up in Alabama. He has that sort of drawl to his accent as well, which is, I don't know, some would say is quite cute. Not that I'm at all, you know, a bit smitten over Tim Cook. But, he's decided that he needs to put some money into that, which is, I think it's a very, very, you know, beautiful thing to do.
Look, I think it's a wonderful thing to do, and he's really the first openly gay CEO from a Fortune 1000 company out there, you know, having come out in October. Yeah. And I love his quote the thing they said when he came out back then, when he says that he considers himself that being gay is amongst the greatest gifts that God has given me. So one, it is, I recognize it as a gift, and two, it's a gift from God. So it's like, I really
mixing the two together.
Yeah, I really think that's a smart saying.
And especially if you believe in God, hey, you know, that is what it is. It's you know, it's who you believe in that created you. So hey. Yeah.
Now, talking about God, we have the rapture that we're going to talk about next here on Techno Gaze on Joy 94.9.
Techno Gaze.
This is Technogaze on Joy 94.9. It's 17 minutes past Monday, as I trip over my tongue.
17 minutes past Monday.
Oh, Monday midday. I didn't even realise that.
Right, good. It's the silly season, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, is that my excuse? Good, I'll take that one.
Yes, yes.
We were talking about God and Rapture.
The Instagram Rapture.
The Instagram Rapture.
Are you on Instagram yourself, Michael?
No, I'm such a Luddite sometimes.
Oh, it's a great way to what?
So it's patronising bless.
Oh, it's just a rapture. It's time to be blessed. No, so Instagram, of course, for those uninitiated in all things social media,
like me,
is a photo sharing app. You can like. I think you can comment on it as well. But it's really just about the photo, so it's not really about words so much.
A bit like Flickr.
Flickr's more about, you know, I think there's Flickr's got a more of a following of actual photographers and people who want to show impressive photography as opposed to Instagram, which is more like, hey, this is where I am. Hey, cool snap.
Instant. Boom. Which is the more not safe for work site?
Oh, I
wouldn't know, says Mark. Okay.
No. I mean, Instagram's probably... There's rules around Instagram as well, and I don't often see, actually... It's not a... what's that other site that everyone gets onto and sends... If you know the site I'm thinking of, Texas 0427 Joy 949.
This is we really shouldn't use this venue to scout for help on what sites to see.
No, it's anyway.
Yes. Getting back to the
Instagram.
Rapture. God, we get so easily distracted.
I think the most amazing news out of this particular Instagram rapper, and this might allude to what the actual story is, but Justin Bieber has lost 3.5 million followers on Instagram due to this rapture, so to speak.
And what was raptured?
Well, apparently, so a lot of internet bots other fake accounts have been set up on Instagram. And Instagram, as in the company,
yes,
which is actually owned by Facebook, by the way.
Yeah, they bought them a little while ago.
Has decided that they want to find all these bots and turn them off. So they've disabled a whole bunch of accounts and removed them as followers on other people's accounts.
So Justin Bieber's followers weren't real people, is what you were saying?
Well, 3.5 million, according to Instagram, yeah. Which
is a lot.
That's not a bad sum of, and
he wasn't the only celebrity that was hit. There was some other celebrity that lost 56% of their followers, and I had a look at her name. It was like, I didn't even know who she was. It's like, oh, okay.
And this is the thing. So a lot of social media stuff, right? So there's people on social media who are on social networking sites in general that are purely their presence is the social networking presence. So they are purely known for their presence on the internet.
And they make money out of this because, you know, companies pay them to make sponsored posts. So, you know, if Justin Bieber says, I like Acme widgets, you know, half the world's going to go out and buy Acme widgets. Now that these celebrities are losing their followers or followships or whatever the proper term is, you know, what's going to happen to the sponsors? Are they going to be as willing to do that? Or not? Well, which will be interesting. So it could be that in some ways Instagram are really cooking their own goose.
Yes. Yes.
Because if the celebrities have less followers, they get less sponsorship, but they find some other platform where they're going to make more money.
Perhaps there's also a Persian. If it's getting out of hand, then, you know, a whole bunch of accounts that aren't actually there functioning as, you know, what the total... the reason for the site to exist is, which is actual social interaction.
Yeah.
That's a concern. I mean, I think I'm on Instagram and I've got a whole bunch of followers that I don't even know. They just kind of and this is the other thing.
Have you checked lately? They're probably all
gone.
Well,
yeah, they may well have. I didn't pay for them, so hey, that's okay. But it's one of those sites where you can just post photos and you can hashtag photos as well, so people can just do searches for things and they end up. Am I talking about Instagram or Snapchat? I can't remember.
No. Snapchat, I think, is the site. So thank you to the listener without a name for that. It was a site where actually, maybe there are some not...
Snapchat is not the one that I'm thinking of.
Okay. But we'll review it. We should have a look. We should do some research.
Snapchat is another... We've discussed this before. It's a very interesting site in itself. But thank you for that message, Anonymous. You're a webmaster, apparently. Yes.
Yep.
Very good. Anonymous webmaster.
No, this is not Thursday night. Now, the thing that I liked is that there is one account in Instagram that lost 18 million followers.
Yes.
Guess whose?
Who?
Instagram.
Oh, no.
So they purged themselves.
Well, that's all right. I think, you know,
oh, I wish this was Thursday night. Oh, things like that. We should have a techno is after dark. We've spoken about this before.
We have. Maybe we should try and take on the other show. Maybe be a guest segment. Do the
techno goes after dark
on hide and seek.
Let us move on. Now this one's an interesting one. A number of top hotel chains in the US, including famous brands such as Hilton and Marriott, depending whether you're American or not, have said that mobile hotspots interfere with on-site wireless networks and may even pose a security risk.
Okay, so we're talking about mobile hotspots being Wi-Fi access points that have been set up by a mobile phone.
Yeah, so right? When you're tethering you access the hotspot on your phone. So you go to a hotel and you don't want to get on their Wi-Fi for maybe it costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so you use your mobile phone.
Right, and that's a good way to, you might set up your laptop to tether to your phone and be able to connect to the rest of the world. You might have that through, particularly through if you're there for a business. You'll need to keep up to date with what's going on business-wise and what better place to do that than a hotel.
Yeah. So, but these hotels said, oh, no, this is going to cause problems to our wireless network, security risk. So they've petitioned the FCC for permission to cripple those types of devices when on hotel property.
Ah. This is so, and they've talked about it. So this is actually a submission to the FCC. They claim that it's actually interfering with the security of their networks.
Yeah,
perhaps
and they're saying it's not individuals in hotel rooms. It's more when you get a convention, get a whole lot of people. You've got all these spurious airwaves, and it's affecting our own infrastructure, and therefore may affect our security services. Of course, they deny it's got nothing to do with the fact that they're losing revenue.
Yeah, but these. Particularly for conventions and so forth, they can sometimes charge up to $250 to even $1,000 for internet access over the course of a visit.
That's
and this
right.
is particularly a market that often it's business. The conventions are business related, so they can often just the people who set up or connect to these Wi-Fi access points can just charge it onto their business and not really have to worry about it. But it's a bit of a moneymaker for them, isn't it?
Totally. So there was a case in Nashville earlier on this year where they didn't allow the conventioners, so the people who were on the stalls and the stands at the convention to use their own Wi-Fi. They must have blocked it. And they forced them to, as you said, pay between $250 and $1,000 a booth.
For the stall holders
to use it.
Yeah.
And the FCC fined them. They said, you're not allowed to do it, which is why they've gone officially now with this petition to say, hey, we want to do this. Now, what's interesting is there are a couple of ways of blocking access. One is to block the airwaves. Send enough noise down the airway so you block every single device, which one is illegal, but two would also knock out their own systems.
Yes.
So what they're proposing, and they also want the FCC to clarify this as part of their submission, is they want to do something called de-auth packet disconnects.
Right.
So as part of the Wi-Fi standard, which I didn't realize beforehand, that there's something called a de-auth where the Wi-Fi access point can send a de-auth packet to the client, to your PC or whatever it's connected, which says, I want you to authorize against me yet again.
Yep.
So essentially it reconnects. Now, if you send lots and lots and lots of these packets all the time and you send them specifically to individual devices, they can knock out people's individual devices through a denial of service attack without affecting their own equipment.
Right.
And you can imagine the response from companies like Google and other people saying, hey, which I think is right, you really sure this isn't a money-spinning exercise? And what is the interference and what is the real justification for this?
And often, like particularly in relation to conventions, Microsoft put on massive conventions, so do Google, in convention centres that are, often hotels.
Yes, that's right.
I suspect that, and part of that usually for particularly IT-related conventions is, hey, here's a Wi-Fi system to connect your devices to. Oftentimes, it can be a bit flaky depending on the number of IT-ners trying to get on this Wi-Fi network at the same time. But they're keen, like they obviously are keen to ensure that their guests who have paid a couple of $1,000 to get on to actually be at the convention to have them comfortable
and have
access to the internet as well. So I suspect they would be they want to maintain that ability to keep it keep their punters happy.
Yes. So the FCC are probably going to rule in a couple of months, and somehow I don't think the hotels are going to be lucky. Mm. I certainly hope not. Now, from the microphones here at Joy, straight to the ears of Chinese giant Alibaba.
Right.
Donna asks.
Yes.
And rumours prevail.
Alibaba prevail.
Well, no, I'm saying rumours prevail because this is a rumour. There is no fact on this, but there is a very strong rumour that Alibaba, who is a very large e-commerce company, floated on the US Stock Exchange a few months ago, spoke about, I think, something like $25 billion from memory.
Yep.
They're rumoured to be working on a high-end games console, fairly specifically for the Chinese market.
Right.
So, Donna, there's your answer. You might have to wait till next year. You might have to go to China.
And it's been a bit of a... there's obviously, being Chinese, there's actually some rules that Chinese manufacturers need to adhere to in terms of the consoles that are made. In fact, China, for 15 years up until last year, banned the manufacturer of consoles.
Yeah,
use of
consoles. So you weren't allowed to own a gaming console in China until just recently. 15 years this ban was on there.
Hmm.
And then the Chinese government recently lifted that ban.
Right.
So the market is very, very young. Xbox only launched there, I think, in October, and PlayStation is launching in January of next year, so next month.
Mm.
So it really is, from a timing perspective, it's a really good time for somebody like Alibaba to come in there. You know, number two, they're a Chinese company, and I think that they understand the market way better than any foreign company is ever going to understand the market.
Mm.
And they are probably one of the few players in China that is capable of doing something like this. You know, they're huge, they've got resources, so they're going to be able to commission developers to write games specifically for them.
Yeah, with such big are they publicly listed? $20 billion is what they were
listed on one of the US stock exchanges, probably NASDAQ.
So with that sort of size, they could take on Microsoft and Sony. In fact, Sony would look quite small in comparison.
Probably they would, yeah. And to a local audience, and a very, very large local audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if you have an Australian company that's got a potential market of 20 million, it's nothing. But when you're talking about, 1.5 billion people or something like that?
Yep.
Then, it may or may not happen, but I would probably put some money on it, which means it won't happen. Actually, that's a kiss of death, isn't it?
Mm.
Yes.
Yes.
Michael and his famous predictions. We'll probably come back to my BlackBerry prediction.
Oh, we need to do
later
that
later on.
Next.
Yes. We'll see what happens to that. It's now 12:30 exactly. Joy 94.9.
TechnoGiz.
Love your afternoons. Joy 94.9.
19 degrees here in Melbourne. Mm. Nice sunny day. Top of 23.
Beautiful Christmas weather, eh?
Indeed. And I wonder how many people are out there shopping for their post-Christmas Boxing Day bargains, and probably online. And if so, well, we're hoping you're listening to us and all the other shows here on Joy 94.9.
Yes. Yes, it's a great lineup of afternoon lifestyle shows here on Joy 94.9.
I like Saturdays. It's one of those days where you could just lay in bed and listen to the radio.
Hang out. Yep. Perhaps get out of bed and lay in the sun.
Yes, that would be nice as well. Or, like us, come into the studio, otherwise it'll be dead air from 12 to 1. Which is not good.
No. Now,
The Grinch?
In a few moments, we mentioned before Ello. We're going to talk about
Ello,
which is a social media site. We asked before what photo sharing apps there are around the internet, and
we're getting
Adrian, the mystery webmaster. He's named himself now. Thank you, Adrian, for telling us your name. Pinterest is another one.
That's right.
That's pretty cool site.
I used Pinterest the other day for the first time.
Have you got an account?
No.
Oh, right.
I did a search for some household cleaning stuff, and it was a Pinterest article. So I felt very domesticated.
It's that time of year, isn't it? Yeah. what was the one that we realized?
Tumblr.
Tumblr. That's the site that is
another site without vowels.
Yeah, well, there is one vowel in it, but it doesn't have the E. Actually, there's a bit of a theme there, isn't it? Without the E, does that mean it's
no.
mean it's of some
no coincidence? I don't know.
Anyway, Oh, shall we move on? That's right. Oh, the government.
Our beloved government.
Oh. So, of course, there's been an ongoing thing about the government wanting to take control of the internet. That's my phrase for this. So they essentially want to take over, introduce a new firewall, Great Firewall of Australia. I don't know.
Great Firewall of Australia.
Yes. And one of the things that they have been talking about for the past year or so, Malcolm Turnbull in particular has been pushing this line, is the ability to store metadata of everyone who connects to the internet through Australian ISPs.
So this is the mandatory data retention plans.
Yes.
The ones that George Brandis spoke about so eloquently.
Yes. So we're talking about George Brandis being our Attorney General and Malcolm Turnbull being our Communications Minister. What do they do? They've now, so the department responsible for this area of legislation has asked, and it's been discovered through an online tech publication, The Register, which is one of my favourites anyway. They have a little R symbol, which is like the registration. Anyway.
I was wondering where you're going with the R. What was happening after that?
No, they've not yet been able to confirm whether all recipients of this particular questionnaire have actually had this same time period. But it's been alleged that this particular petition, or what was it, a questionnaire that was sent out to a whole bunch of ISPs, was only given 9 working days to respond. Now, the questionnaire is in relation to these data retention laws. It's actually asking a lot of pertinent information around how much would cost to implement
right. So, to the telcos, if we did this, what's it going to cost? What's the impact? Yeah,
and it's shed a bit of light on the government's position on what they're trying to achieve here. So they've also talked about, hey, how much is it going to cost? And by the way, you can outsource the data storage capacity for this as well. Okay. And even if you do, what will be the costs in relation to that?
Now, 9 working days doesn't sound very much.
No. So, and
when was it sent?
It was sent on December the 24th.
Oh, Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Oh, when most companies are fully staffed.
all over that stuff. I guess, so some people might actually be finding out about it through the media reports. It's like, oh, just checking up on my latest tech news. What? I have to respond to what?
It almost makes you think that perhaps some people weren't really serious about consulting the industry. Perhaps, I don't know, says he.
Well, it might also be that perhaps they've got some ISPs who are supportive of the legislation, who are more inclined to respond to these because they may already have these figures available to them how much the cost, you know, is, because they've already thought about considering it, as opposed to just fighting the concept of the legislation, which other ISPs have done. 40 odd telcos were sent this thing, and were given a due date of January the 9th. So that effectively gives, what, 9... was it 9 days?
Nine working days.
Through some of the negative industry feedback that they got, they've actually extended that by a week. So they've now extended to the response to January 16.
Now, to be fair to everyone, the Register does say, hey, we haven't been able to verify the December 24th. We believe that some certainly have, whether it's all or not, we don't know.
The letter was oddly dated just December 2014. So maybe it was sent on December 24th. Maybe it was sent on December 1. Who knows?
But I think, from what I read, there was some metadata that seemed to indicate it was on the 24th, and that's why they're saying the 24th.
Right, yeah. So it's actually a questionnaire that was put together by PricewaterhouseCoopers, which in itself is not a surprise because it's been known that PwC have been consulting with the government on all aspects of this particular legislation.
And some of the questions were things like, what are the operational benefits? Would the additional store data provide to your business? So, you know, is there anything good for you? And what do you think your upfront capital costs are going to be if the mandatory data retention period was different to what's currently proposed, which was somewhere between 12 and 36 months? So I'm just wondering whether that means that they're hedging their bets and saying, well, look, if we made it 6 months, then you know, maybe that will appease the population, or maybe we'll make it 4 years, and because it's not going to cost you that much, we don't know.
Yeah, so there's some interesting insights into where the government's going with this, and it looks like, you know, just by mere fact of them consulting, they can tick that box. They can say, hey, we've consulted with industry. These people are saying this is how much it's going to cost, and they're probably more favourable numbers to the other ones who are sort of more inclined to bear the full cost out in these types of responses, I suspect.
Yeah. So it'll be another one to watch.
Yes. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Now, they made a big splash.
They did.
And then they sort of belly flopped after the big splash.
Yes. Now, if you recall, it was around, particularly around Facebook's a stance on the use of real names, as in your legal name, as opposed to perhaps a name that you're very well known as. And this, in fact, at the time, affected quite a number of the GLBTIQ community, in particular drag, kings and queens, perhaps, would
go
use
on
different names.
Name. Yeah.
And they would have Facebook accounts, actual Facebook accounts with that name. They were being asked to shut down that particular account. And other people who wished to remain anonymous or semi-anonymous on the internet.
Plus there was this big group of people that felt very comfortable with Allo, because Allo said, if we advertise, then we have to give information about you to our advertisers, because they need to know the demographics. We will never advertise. This is a policy. And so a lot of people said, yep, this is great. Let's move to them. And which is why it drew so much interest.
Mm.
And it's been pretty quiet since then. And I think there are, like you said earlier on, a lot of people signed up, had a look around. Oh, not many people here, not many of my friends. And
yeah, it's that whole critical mass thing that any social media site needs to have, particularly when it's trying to take on an existing social media site, which is quite active in the way that the interaction needs to occur. So you can't just, like in the sense of, say, Instagram and all the photo sharing apps that we were talking about before, it's quite a passive thing. You can jump onto one, post a photo there, and jump onto another and post a photo there, and it's just like liking and hashtagging and so forth. Facebook and Allo, like, and Allo was basing a lot of its functionality on what Facebook gives you the capability to do, so write posts and describe
because
what's going on in
your world. Because people are comfortable with that as well, yeah, and you'd need that.
That was its kind of, and that is quite a difficult thing for them to do, is to usurp the position of Facebook. So, Allo have talked about, I think just recently, and they've actually announced plans to in 2015 to include native mobile apps for iOS and Android.
So rather than using your browser to access them, yes, they'll have native, which will make it easier for people.
Mm.
And they're also referring to a big design update to the desktop interface.
And one of the criticisms that I know I levelled at them, and it echoed quite a lot of the tech writing that was done at the time, was this odd use of Korean new around the entire site.
It's funny, you know, how I have this pet peeve with Times Roman on websites or even on printed matter. So you get this fixation, this font is offensive to my eyes.
Yes, and Korean New is that fixed width font, if you're in the fontologist world. Is that a word? The kind of the world of understanding typography, that's the word. Fontologist, what the hell? How did I come up with that?
A new word for the day.
And it's that sort of typewriter-ish look, and it just didn't seem to work really well with a website, a modern website anyway.
But, you know, their whole theme is black and white and very sparse and very quick, and you know, we don't know what the new one's going to look like and, you know, whether it will look better or load slower. But they raised $5.5 million in October, and they're obviously using this to fund this initiative. So, again, are they going to be around for much longer? Are they going to get new users? We'll have a look, but they're not dead yet.
That's correct. Yes, and I've still got an account. I'll probably log back in when it happens.
Yeah, and have a look and see.
Check it out. Yep.
Competition is always good, except when we're on air, of course.
Not for us.
Exactly. It's 17 minutes to 1 here on Joy 94.9.
Technogaze.
Great shows. Great topics. Great radio.
In
Joy 94.9.
Indeed.
In. Can't I get a word in edgeways, you big announcer man?
Where's the big red button that I can turn it off?
over this side of the desk.
Oh, I wouldn't be on that side of the desk.
Oh. You'll get a chance next week.
Got to wait a whole week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mark and Michael in the studio this week, Technogaze.
Joy 94.9.
That's the one.
If you want to contact us, as Adrian has done earlier, you can do so. Email us on air at joy.org.au. Text us 0427-JOY-949.
That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
Or call us 1-300-JOY-949.
Oh, yes. Yes, Mushin. Thank you for being on the front desk. As always, you're a star, Mushin.
And you don't need to be a webmaster to talk to us.
No. If you could be a master of something else.
No. Wrong time slot. Wrong time slot.
Anyway.
You one-track-minded person. North Korea. And Sony Pictures.
Yes.
Continue to plague us. Now, Sony, who last week cancelled the release of The Interview and then was chastised by President Obama saying, hey guys, why didn't you talk to us beforehand, have now come back and said, oh, we're going to release it online. In fact, they have released it online places like YouTube, where you can rent or buy the movie, and people have been doing that. They've also decided that they were going to release it in cinemas, which they did on Christmas Day in the US on select cinemas. So not their usual broad range of cinemas, but the ones that put up their hand, and probably a lot of smaller cinemas. And they've gotten full houses.
Wow.
Yeah, so a lot of people going there. And apparently, and I think this is very much an American thing, that the audience, instead of clapping at the bits where the Korean president gets killed, they clapped at the bits that basically were promoting freedom of speech. And you can imagine an American audience doing this.
Oh, everyone's all patriotic.
Oh, that's all right. Now, I think it was, last week we knew that the US government or the FBI had come out and said, oh, North Koreans, you're bad. You're the ones that hacked into Sony Pictures. Now, there's a bit more doubt creeping out in the voices of analysts who are saying, maybe not. And one of the reasons why they're saying maybe not is that the North Korean internet infrastructure is probably nowhere near as developed as our infrastructure. And when I read this, I went, this is interesting. They have a single connection into the country, so no redundancy. They have a total... Actually, can we have a drum roll? They have a total of 1,024 IP addresses for the whole country.
1,020. What?
That means only 1,024 devices can connect with a unique IP address.
That's
into the internet.
Four C blocks.
Four C blocks.
C blocks, yes.
ABC, yeah. There are four C blocks, if you know the difference between A class and B class and C class network.
Yeah.
Which is tiny. And nobody knows exactly what speed their connection is, but somewhere between 2.5 and 10 gigabits generally is thought to be. So, and all of this internet infrastructure is in the capital city of, I'm not going to pronounce it properly, Pyongyang, I think it is.
Yep.
So it's certainly not very diverse. So the question is, does this country really have the technical expertise and resources to carry out an attack on Sony Pictures?
So, and the attack was released, it was a denial of service, a distributed denial of service attack, wasn't it? Oh, no, this is a security attack, actually, isn't it? But, actually...
It was a DDoS attack.
Yes, and this was the other aspect of this particular news item was that... so they released it in cinemas, but they also released it on Google's Play Now, I think is the name of the service. I can't remember now.
Oh, the Sony Pictures.
Yep. So PlayStation Network, I think, had it available, and the Xbox Network. So they tried to be, corporate America, hey, everyone competition's good type thing. The result is that the PlayStation service went down, and I think also Xbox's service went down as a result of...
So this is this counter thing. So Sony Pictures get hacked, North Korea gets a DDoS attack, and then Sony Pictures, when they release their movie onto these online things like PlayStation and Xbox, they get a DDoS attack as well. So it's like one cyber counterattack after counterattack. What is interesting now? The Xbox and I think PlayStation came back after a day or a day and a half, if not fully, then in limp mode. Just getting back to the North Korean DDoS attack, you would think that if let's say Australia suffered a whole internet outage. We have massive infrastructure. It is difficult to do. But because North Korea has got such minimal infrastructure, a DDoS attack is much more likely to work.
Yes.
The one of the really, really interesting things is there were two elements to the DDoS attack, and one of them was this Unix NTP vulnerability that we spoke about at the top of the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So...
timely.
Very, very timely. So next week, yes, we'll probably have some more news on what's happening between North Korea and, you know, the rest of the world.
By all accounts, it's not a great movie, though, is it?
No, which... But, yeah, the cinemas are flooded with people.
Oh, well.
And
there are the conspiracy theories, isn't there? In fact, the whole thing was just a rouge by Sony's marketing team to try and get a whole bunch of bums on seats. And boy, if that was the case, has it worked? They even got the US president to talk about it.
To essentially endorse the movie and say, people, you should go and see the movie.
Yeah, and, well, you know, we should defend the rights of this movie.
My only question to that is, do you really think that Sony's marketing department is as good as that they're able to pull off something like this? And
A whole bunch of and some of the stuff that actually was released as part of the attack was pretty profound. Like, we're talking, you know, pretty closed secrets of such an organization.
That's so, right.
Yeah, the likelihood of that.
It does fit our internal mindset that says, ooh, conspiracy, this would be good. Now, another story that we looked at, I think it was back in May, was about the Google self-drive car.
Oh, yes. A cute little koala car.
Yeah, it looked like a koala, didn't it? Yeah. It's just the face. Now, it was a really, really early prototype that was testing certain aspects of the self-drive car. I didn't realise at the time, but the headlights on the car were actually painted on, which I think is why it gave it this koala eye-looking thing.
Aww.
Yeah, yes. It didn't have pedals. It didn't have a steering wheel. Well, Google have now released another prototype, but this is the full version. So the first build of a fully functional prototype that's legally allowed to be driven on California roads.
Yep.
So the car can do everything. It hasn't. I don't think it's been on the road just yet, and they're going to be doing some more internal testing for the next 5 or 6 months before they release it on the road. But it's the next stage, and there have been lots and lots of prototypes since then that have been focusing on specific elements of the self-driving aspect of the car. We will put up on our Facebook page a photo of what the car looks like. It still looks pretty much like it did before. Actually, it looks like a toy police car, because it's got this big dome, like this oversized siren or light dome on the top, which it must have its LiDAR detectors and everything else.
Yeah, it's got radar built in, which I think is actually quite an interesting component to the self-driving car, because it's radar, it can actually see through certain surfaces. So an example that was given in one of the write-ups that I saw was through a hedge that was on the side of the road, they could actually see a cyclist waiting to cross the road.
Yep.
And the driving... Well, in fact, I think it was a cyclist that was moving, and the car stopped as a result. So, you know, there's some interesting technology there that enhances the human experience of driving, as in it... It's better than...
Better than human. No, because if the hedge is not if you can't see through it, then you're not going to know that there's cyclists there. And I guess probably one of the things that it does work out is the speed that the object is moving, and calculates it's probably a cyclist because it's faster than somebody can walk, or a car, or, you know, something like that.
And it's a whole thing of, you know, hey, there's probably bugs and probably situations where it doesn't work itself out so well. But that's the same with humans, right? We're not that great at driving ourselves.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, but if there's a bug and something accident happens, well, really, you need over time to look at what's the accident rates between human drivers and automated drivers, and which is better for everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had discussions before, you know, what if the computer decides, you know, whose life is more important?
Take over
and stuff like that. But that's sort of for another show. Now, because of California road rules, the car does have a proper steering wheel and does have brakes and pedals and stuff like that. And I think the road rules say that a driver must be in control of all times, as in you must be sitting up front ready to put your foot on the brake or to take over if the computer fails.
Right. So essentially you need to be concentrating for the entire time.
And probably Google's mind, and certainly in my mind, as we get more experience and we as a society build up more confidence in the use of technology in this way, that the road rules will start to change, that there'll probably be some sort of certification process. And once you undergo a certain certification process, and hopefully a process that moves forward in terms of, you know, how do you release software updates and stuff like that, that rules will change that, yep, driverless cars are there. You don't need a steering wheel. You know, you can have two people in the car facing each other, talking over something.
Become more acceptable.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because I look forward to such a device for my old age, which is, oh, what time is it? It's tomorrow, isn't it? Now, talking about time, we have managed to...
Already 5 minutes to one, isn't it?
Exactly.
Here on TechnoGaze.
So time goes so quickly.
You're on Joy 94.9.
TechnoGaze. This is Joy 94.9, and you're listening to TechnoGaze, and the last bit of TechnoGaze, because we are running out of time, as usual. Now, I saw this story, and I thought, we have to talk about
very quickly,
it.
Yes.
Very quickly. Now, the French are known for being very protective of their language.
They actually have this thing called, what is it?
L'Académie Française.
Yes, which the Academy of French Speakingness.
That are responsible, apart from other things, of producing the country's official dictionary, and they've come out with a warning.
It's great that I've murdered the English language in explaining what that was, isn't it?
Oh, you'd be in jail in France. Because they've come out and, you know, they've just issued a warning about a new threat. Stay calm. It's about the use of the word LOL.
So apparently use of acronyms or use of three-letter words to describe a thing is not the way to do things.
It is not on. Now, it's not so... Part of it is, of course, because LOL is, you know, a shortening for an English word, but the French have something similar, MDR, mort de rire. And they say, you know, they prefer that people don't use abbreviations when there's a phrase that can be written out that's more descriptive, even for your 140-character tweets. So mourir is one of the ones that they suggest, which means essentially to die of laughter. Mm. Yeah, well, that's the French.
Yes.
Now, we have a bit of an announcement.
Yes. Very, very sad to say.
Well,
happy and sad.
Happy and sad. We're taking a bit of a break.
We are. We're going to take three months off in the new year. Which means that next week, due to the way that the programming grid works here at Joy 94.9, is our last show.
That's right.
For 3 months. So tune in, because we'll have, more of the same, really. But if you're, you know, if you're going to miss us over the next 3 months, hey, why not go for a last hurrah? That's what I'm going to be doing anyway.
Not really last hurrah, because we're going to be back on April the 11th.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
With more meanderings and, I don't know, being distracted and going off tangent. So if you like us off tangent, let us know. If you don't like us off tangent, let us know.
We value your feedback.
We do. And, you know, if you want us to maybe play some music during the show, we can do that as well. Indeed.
So we've got time for today. If you missed any part of the show, or if you'd like to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by checking out joy.org.au/technogaze.
And coming up next, of course, is Cravings with Pete Dillon, followed by The Boys of Fender Bender and Critical Hit.
Excellent working programming for the Saturday afternoon.
Enjoy the rest of the holiday season. I hope you all have a great, safe and happy new year. And we will speak to you next year.
Next year. Ciao for now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.